minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things green and gold. This is episode 754. As we're going to be taking a look at the Packers special teams and coaching staff later on in this episode, my name is Mike Wellen. Alongside me, Gage Bridgeford, breaking things down. But it's a big day in Packer Nation. A couple big things. One, the Packers were on the field for the first time in training camp. We'll be breaking that down a little bit, and we'll be bringing down with some notes from our very own Andy Herman and also the Athletics' Matt Schneidman for what they saw out at Lambeau Field and at Clark-Hinkle Field. And also, Kenny Clark has got his new contract, and it is quite the contract indeed as well. And Russ Ball may have worked his magic again. Well, we shall see. But before we jump into that, Gage, how's Indiana treating you?
Indiana's treating me well. It's not been too hot as of late. We've kind of cooled off, so that's hopefully that summer like super heat is gone, and we'll start getting into a little bit of cooler weather that we generally get here in the fall.
We'll have to absolutely, and whereas here's Wisconsin, it's all right. It's passable, and it's not too bad. And also, I just got the update as well that we were talking about before we started recording, as the Packers did also make some releases as well. We'll talk about those in a little bit. But let's start with the Kenny Clark contract here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It broke really early this morning. I think Schefter had it first, followed by Rappaport and Pelissero. It is a four-year extension for $70 million, $25 million signing bonus. $37 million of it will be paid over the first 2 years. Kenny Clark is now the highest-paid nose tackle in league history. He's heading into the final year of his contract, his rookie contract as well. He is the fourth highest-paid interior defensive lineman in terms of average annual value at $17.5 million. Made the Pro Bowl last year. He's now the second-highest-paid Packer behind Aaron Rodgers. And you got to think he's worth every penny. He's still so young, and he's only getting better. And you got to think that the Packers have done a great job locking up one of their core pieces for the next 4+ years.
I've been, over the last week or so, the big thing on Packers Twitter has been you can only keep two of these three guys, and it's been Kenny, D-Bock, and Aaron Jones. And I've seen mixed reviews. I've seen people say Clark and Jones, Jones and Bakhtiari, but the entire time I'm like, Clark's got to be the one. If you only keep one, he's got to be the one you keep. He's super young. He's been super valuable. Plays a huge role on this team. Running backs a little more replaceable. You don't want to pay running backs. And then you got left tackles, which Bakhtiari has been great, arguably the best left tackle in football, but he's older. So Clark was the one you had to keep. It was great to see him get that deal. I saw the video of him doing his post-practice kind of media interview, and he just had a big grin on his face the entire time. And it was good to see. He was rewarded appropriately. I was actually pleasantly surprised with the amount of money that was on that deal. Obviously, we've seen other defensive tackles in recent years get more money than he did, but obviously, as a pure nose tackle, he set his own market, and very deserving.
Well, absolutely, and it sounds like he got a. From what I read, he got a text and call from his mom and then his agent saying that it was done. He signed it this morning. Mike Pettine broke the news to the team right before practice, and it sounds like they just mobbed him, and they went crazy. And now we got to think toward the future as well. Like, you talked about Bakhtiari and Aaron Jones. Kevin King's up for a new contract as well. Corey Linsley's contract is up, so you got to think the writing's on kind of on the wall for him. But when you look at these deals, also with a chance to maybe get out of Aaron Rodgers' deal in after another year or two, I want to see how Russ Ball manages this, because he's been one of the greatest cap guys in the league, but now he's really got to work some extra magic to try and keep the core pieces for this team in place.
For one, he already got a win with Kenny Clark's deal. Per Spotrac, his average annual salary is projected to be like 18 plus, and he got him in at 17.5. So that's a win there. The cap is a myth unless you mismanage it as poorly as the Eagles did, and they're like $150 million in a hole or whatever it is. So he is, for my entire life, he's managed the cap better than just about anybody else in the NFL. I'm sure he'll figure out something. A big key is going to be hitting on draft picks, like these draft picks that are coming through. A.J. Dillon has to hit. Like, I think that him coming in was kind of the writing on the wall for Aaron Jones, unfortunately. I love Aaron Jones. I would love to keep him around, but I just think he's going to cost too much money, and they're not going to pay him after they just drafted A.J. Dillon. Jordan Love's going to have to be a hit. That's what it's gonna come down to, is hitting on these draft picks while you have veterans that are costing a lot of money.
Well, it's not even those. I think I also go back to the offensive line. And you got to think, because you talk about Corey Lindsey and Bakhtiari, if someone like Hansen and Runyon can come in and get some playing time right away and they can hit, that makes things easier with a guy like Lindsey. You got to think also maybe writing could be on the wall if there's no dead cap after this year for a guy like Dean Lowry. So there's a lot to think about, but either way, it's a great deal with Kenny Clark. Big 97's staying in Green Bay for the long term, getting his second contract, and you'll hear more about him tomorrow, as well as the next group of Pack-A-Day contributors take care of the defensive line. Well, that being said, let's jump into Packers practice. It happened today at Clark Kinkle Field for the first time. Again, no fans in attendance, which makes you sad, so you couldn't see the bikes getting ridden. But we got some good notes, and again, we're using the Athletic's Matt Scheinman and our very own Andy Herman. Looking at Scheinman, it said Tim Boyle took the second line reps at quarterback, and apparently everyone, he had a really, really good day. The same with Reggie Begelton, and some like MVS actually played pretty well as well. So from what you've read, because you said you were keeping track as much as you could throughout the day, what have you heard about from the offense, from what you've been able to find?
Reggie was the guy that I heard a lot about today. I've seen clips of him catching passes from Rodgers, from Boyle. I've heard his name a number of times today. I've seen on a negative side, on Josh Jackson has had he's gotten beat a couple of times today by Alan Lazard. He's gotten beat by MBS earlier in the day, so that's not necessarily great. I don't know. I didn't see the play, obviously, of how he got beat. But the main talking point that I've seen literally all over Packers Twitter has been A.J. Dillon's legs. I don't know about you, but I've seen them everywhere. The guy's got literal, like, just truck. Like, he is a Mack truck on his lower half. So he's a big guy.
Yeah, and kind of going off of that, here's a quote from Matt LaFleur after practice. It says, A.J. Dillon, he's got some massive legs. We have not seen a running back built like that, not in my career that I've been around. And remember, Matt LaFleur was the OC for Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
So if A.J. Dillon's got a bigger, lower body than Derrick Henry, that's fairly terrifying.
That's saying something. That's saying something right there.
And there is a picture going on. You can find it on Matt Scheinman's Twitter, of A.J. Dillon wearing basically shorty shorts, and he looks like an absolute tank. So there's stuff to be excited about for some of these rookies. Jordan Love sounds like he had a decent day. He seemed like he was thinking of a few things a little bit too much, but he had a couple nice passes. He was able to hit some other people. Like, he was able to hit, I think, Begelton a few times. Kumaro, he was able to hit. EQ is back. He seems to have not been missing a beat, so he looks pretty solid as well. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers in his yearly facial hair update. As according to Matt Scheinman, he is now looking like Hal from Happy Gilmore. So we can have a nice glass of shut the heck up.
Yeah.
Other quotes from practice, or other takeaways, I should say. Lane Taylor got the first crack at right guard today. Billy Turner was the first crack at right tackle. They then moved Taylor into guard and brought in Rick Wagner at right tackle. Rashawn Gary seems to be a little bit leaner. Equanimee St. Brown was running well. Reggie Begelton looked like an interesting slot option. And Tim Boyle looks to be locking himself into QB2. And Aaron Rodgers' quote as well, saying that today was sharp and the energy was really good, according to how he felt. And also, they did get a chance to talk to Christian Kirksey. And Kirksey said that he feels at home. He says it feels like when he was in college at Iowa, and he feels like he's at home. So that's a... Those are good words to hear from a lot of the players around. And again, I'll go back to you. What are some of your takeaways that you've heard from practice?
Yeah, I heard a lot of the same things you did. One interesting thing I'm reading here on Schneidman's Twitter is Chandon Sullivan talked about that he watched every snap of Tremont Williams this offseason as he tries to become the nickel corner this year, and he still talks to Tremont today. So that's a good thing to see. Even though Tremont's not on the team, his name's going to still be around all the time. And I wouldn't be surprised if they bring him back as like a defensive backs coach at some point if he's interested in doing that. Consummate professional veteran leader in that defensive back room that's surrounded by young guys. I saw Jair was the the quote that I saw from Rob Domofsky this morning was that Jair thinks he might be the best corner in the NFL, and then they kind of talked about it, like where he ranks among the other young corners. Let's see, I'm trying to think of, like I said, I was working today, so I'm just trying to go through what I saw. Who was it? It's interesting to see that Boyle is the clear number two. It shows me that they're going to carry three quarterbacks all year long when you get other teams who only carry two just kind of because they have to. So it'll be interesting to see how Green Bay manages that roster spot, considering they had to devote one to just like one extra one to an extra quarterback.
Yeah, I do think that keeping three is smart because obviously we know Rodgers getting older. He's got the contract they can get out of in a couple years. And you probably want to keep Boyle around long term, at the very least as a backup. He's probably a valuable backup. I mean, look at the career Doug Peterson had, and without really it getting outside of one spot with the Eagles a chance to start. So a valuable backup is worth its weight in gold. And if Boyle can provide that for a long time, absolutely you got to keep him around. But you also got to realize Jordan Love is most likely the future at the position, and yeah, I mean, it looks like he had his moments today, but again, with a shortened camp, no preseason, it's going to be tough for a rookie quarterback to step in, especially one who's as raw as Love after having to play for Gary Anderson for a year. It's going to take some time, especially with the circumstances. So I gotta think he wasn't going to be ready this year anyway. But it was only compounded by the fact that everything got delayed and there's no preseason and all the stuff like that.
Absolutely, yeah. One thing that I forgot to kind of touch on that you had mentioned was seeing Lane Taylor get the first crack at right guard with Billy Turner at right tackle. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. The whole point of you bringing in Rick Wagner was for him to start at right tackle. I understand that it only was like one snap, but first crack needs to be on this new free agent that we just signed after letting Brian Bulaga, who, when healthy, which I understand that has been a big issue, when healthy, though, he is one of the best right tackles in football, and Rick Wagner was brought in as his replacement. So I don't want to see Lane Taylor out there. I want to see Billy Turner and Rick Wagner. That's the group I want to see from on week one.
Absolutely. And any other things to bring out as well? This is now from Andy Herman's Twitter feed. Of course, Andy, the godfather of the Packaday podcast. Tyler Irvin was working with the wide receivers, lined up a receiver almost exclusively. Then they had obviously Lane Taylor and Rick Wagner, that situation at guard and tackle. He talked a lot about Reggie Begelton as well, and Christian Kirksey seemed to have taken quickly control of the huddle and seemed to have already established himself as one of the leaders of that defense, getting things set up. And Zadarius Smith did a little bit more roaming, some more zone drops, it sounded like. Again, it's first day of practice. Let's see what these guys can do after not being on the field since February. So there's a lot of interesting things to go around, and of course everyone's favorite thing to watch, I know when fans were there, was the one-on-one pass rush drills. The only one I got notice of was they put Spider Garvin, the 7th round pick, his first rep was against David Bakhtiari, which really isn't fair.
I love it. I love it, because if Bakhtiari gets beat, that just looks really good for Garvin. And if he doesn't get beat, it's a 7th round rookie. That is a no lose situation for Garvin.
Well, yeah, I remember last year Fackrell beat him beyond belief, and it was the talk of camp for a couple weeks. And we saw that Fackrell ended up having a couple really nice years in Green Bay before he took his way over to New Jersey or New York, however you want to describe it. Well, that being said, I think it's time for us to jump back into our main topic for today, which is the special teams. Well, I guess before that, we'll jump into the releases that were announced by the team officially. They have released tight end, former defensive lineman, and former draft pick James Looney, wide receiver Daryl Stewart, and quarterback Marc-Antoine Dacroix, who was the Canadian player who came in with crazy athleticism, but was already, I think, a little bit older, and was with, again, with a shortened camp, he really was never going to have much of a chance over guys like Josh Jackson, Kadar Holman, Chandon Sullivan. So Packers cutting the roster back down. They reinstated Mason Crosby off the COVID list. Sounds like Hunter Bradley is still on it, I think, but he should be coming off, it sounds like, pretty soon, along with Trayvon Hester and the others. But really no surprises. I know Looney moving to tight end was really they're trying to save his career in Green Bay, but it just didn't work out. He couldn't quite get to the field, get to the active roster. So really no really surprises among that, I don't think.
Yeah, no, none of those names really. Like, Looney was the only name that I really remembered. So seeing him go, like, yeah, it sucks to miss on a former draft pick, but you're not gonna hit bat 1,000. So.
And again, he was a pretty late draft pick. He was a late day three, so it wasn't a massive thing. Well, that being said, let's jump into the special teams. We'll also talk about some of the coaching staff. So let's start with the special teams. We'll go kicker, punter, kick returner. Bradley's going to be back as a long snapper. That's going to happen. He seems to have really come into his own. He got better and better as last year went on. And so I think Bradley's going to be set as a long snapper for a long time. They don't cost much. And if they can have another Brett Goode and Hunter Bradley, I'm all for it. That position is very undervalued by a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really undervalued, and if you can get a guy that's good at his job and you're not, and he doesn't take up a ton of cap, which is important for this Packers roster. And yeah, I think I saw a note from someone today that John Legue or something like that was the one working with the special teams today, but it's most likely that Bradley will be taking that spot back once he returns.
Yeah, it's Bradley's spot to lose. At kicker, Mason Crosby, he was fifth last year in field goal percentage, had a 917. So 91.7%, he went 22 of 24, which was the least amount of anyone in the top 10 as far as amount of field goals. Josh Lambeau led it with a 971. But for Mason, it was a good, solid year. He had the game winners against Detroit. That Monday night game was so much fun to watch him kick the winner and then jump into the crowd. That was really, really cool. And then he got rewarded with the extension. And as long as he plays out that extension, he will end that contract with the most games played of any Green Bay Packer player ever. He's on pace to set that record if he plays his entire contract. And he's a steady, calming influence in the locker room. And you got to think, a guy like Crosby, I remember last year we were ready to move on from him. I remember the year he struggled, people were ready to move on. But like a long snapper, a good, solid, respectable kicker is massive. And a guy like Mason Crosby has done it for a long enough time that, much like a back quarterback, he is worth his weight in gold.
Yeah, having Crosby out there gives me a ton of confidence. I love seeing him go on the field versus when I watch other teams. Like last year, so I live in Indiana. I had to struggle through the Adam Vinatieri fiasco last year. It was terrible to watch, but you never had that with Crosby. Every time, other than that one bad year that he had, every time he goes on the field, I'm like, he's making this. As long as it's inside 55 yards, I have confidence that he's not going to through. Even at he's 36 this year, I still have confidence in him hitting 55-yard field goals with no problem. So, yeah, I don't see any reason to let him go. He's a little pricey, sure, but you know what? If you got a good kicker, there's nothing wrong with that because you can have a game that ends 3-0 and you won because your kicker's good and the other guy missed his shots. So I love seeing Crosby back out on the field. I know Jay Sternberger also is getting ready to I think he might be off the COVID list, but he didn't practice today. So it's good to have Crosby back on the field. Number two in your program's number one in your heart, man.
Well, actually, and that's another good thing about how the NFL is that the COVID list has not really grown the last week. It's been really cutting down. And it seems like the testing is really working, and players are being accountable to themselves and taking care of each other, which is always really, really good to see. And to see the accountability that we're not seeing in baseball is really good to see with the NFL, with so many more players to deal with. And so that's always a very positive thing. And hopefully, like I said, we have Crosby back, hopefully getting Sternberger, Bradley, Hester back soon as well. But then now we got to move on to punter. And we talk about J.K. Scott. Scott had an all right year net of just under 40. He had 29 of his 77 in the 20. 26 of them got returned. He started out really, really good. But again, like as seems like as the weather went, so did his consistency. And a guy like him who is as big as he is, he needs to make sure his mechanics are consistent. And Sean Menegas talked about that at length as well. But again, with Scott, sky's the limit. Packers haven't had a good punter outside a couple years of Massey in a long, long time, probably over 20 years.
J.K. Scott, one thing that's kind of confusing for him, so the dude is, it's not like he's a, like, so he went to Alabama, obviously. But the confusing thing is he's not, like, a Southern guy. He's from Denver. Like, he went to Mullen High School in Denver, Colorado. So the guy's used to kicking in the cold. Like, he's, it, that's not a problem. It shouldn't be an issue for him. So I don't know why, like, I understand cold weather punting is just, it's different. I wouldn't want to kick a probably ice rock in the middle of December in Lambeau, but then again, I'm not a professional punter for a football team, so I don't have to. But I love the talent that he has. Like, his size is just so unique. It's 6'6". The guy's just a freakishly tall human being, especially for a punter when you see, like, kickers and punters often on the smaller side. So he has the, like, the ability to be better, and we saw it in, like, that game against Chicago to start the year. I wrote a piece after the game about studs and duds, and in a game that didn't have a lot of studs, he was one of them. The guy was a monster. He had, when he's on in a game, he can truly be a field flipper and just neutralize an opponent's return game, and you just need to see more consistency out of him. Like, I don't know if it's a technique thing or what it is, but he has that ability to be a great punter and to give Green Bay a true weapon on fourth down. It's just a matter of him performing and doing that.
Well, absolutely. And I wonder if for Scott, if he has to change his routine once it gets a little bit colder, whether it's some extra stretching to make sure those legs are loose, because I feel like that could be part of it where, again, a guy who's 6'6", he's got really long legs and long arms. If it would take a little bit extra time to make sure that those are loose and warm, maybe that slows down the time it takes for him to drop the ball. There's things like that to think about, and that's going to be between him, Sean Menenga. Crosby can probably help with that as well, because since Mason's done it for long enough. But there's all those things that could maybe help J.K. Scott. But like you said, the talent's there. The team's not going to give up on him. And you got to think he can, again, get better in year three. Now, kick returns and punt returns. That was an adventure last year. They were historically bad for about the first half of the season. And by historically bad, they were on pace to have the worst season in NFL history among punt returns. And then Tyler Irvin came in. And Swervin Irvin, in one game, ended that, and he became a weapon out there. 24.3 yards per kick return, 7.2 per punt return. Darius Shepard couldn't get it done. Chandon Sullivan couldn't get it done. Jamal Williams got a chance. He didn't do anything. Is Irvin almost locked into the team because of what he can do as a returner?
I want to say yes, but I can't. Just based on the past 15 years as a Packer fan, just because of what you like, just because you can do something as a returner doesn't guarantee you a roster spot. Like, unless your team is severely top heavy at a position and you're just never flat out going to play, and they're only going to carry five receivers, and you're a receiver, but you're Devin Hester, you're Cordarrelle Patterson, you're Josh Gribbs in the return game, you're never guaranteed a spot on this team because they're always so deep at receiver. They always keep six, seven guys. Like, we saw Trevor Davis stick around for a few years, and Trevor Davis was a good weapon in the return game. He just couldn't catch on as a receiver, and so obviously he was shipped out. I think that Irvin should be locked into the roster, and if I was the one calling the shots, then he would be. But then this is where you factor in the quarterback aspect. So Jordan Love is probably going to be your QB3 entering the year. You're keeping three quarterbacks. That's automatically one less roster spot than you can carry somewhere else, whether that's offensive line, defensive line, corner, receiver, wherever. So if you want to keep him on the roster, someone else somewhere else is going to get shortchanged, and I don't know who that's going to be, because if he can't bring enough on the actual offensive side of the ball, they'll just suffer through another year of below average kick and punt returners and just hope that their offense can make up for it.
Well, so, and that leads to the question is, if Irvin doesn't make the squad, who then becomes the primary returner? Do you see someone like maybe EQ or Chandon Sullivan or Jair, who has returned punts in the past? Like, who do you see could be that other returner?
I don't know who the returner would be, but I don't want Jair to do it. I don't want to risk him getting hurt on a punt return or a kick return. I understand that they've eliminated a lot of the danger in kick returning, but it's still, like, if a guy's running full speed one direction, full speed the other direction, that's brick wall meeting an immovable object real fast, and I don't really feel like watching that happen. I don't know. You find one of your athletes and say, hey, go be an athlete for me, like, four or five times a game. On punt, like, punt returning is such a weird thing. Like, you always see guys muff the ball. It doesn't matter if a guy's been doing it for 10 years, he's still going to muff one. If Chandon Sullivan, if that's how he sticks out there, then great. That's awesome. But just any, like, I would love for Urban to be the guy. And if he's not the guy, you just have to kind of go throughout the week, say, you know what, this guy's hot, let's let them run, and just that'll have to do for a few weeks.
Yeah, I guess so, and we'll see. And then before we go to the coaches, there's a few core special teamers that have been mentioned in the past, and obviously Hunter Bradley is one of them, but I know specifically last week, I think it was Matt LaFleur talked about who had stepped up as leaders, and one of them was Will Redmond. He said Will Redmond has stepped up as a leader in the locker room. He seems to be now the new Jared Bush on special teams, who's going to be that go-to guy on all core four special teams units, kickoff, kick return, punt, and punt return. Him, Oren Burks, got a lot of special teams looks last year. And you got to think now maybe Curtis Bolton could get some of those looks now that he's healthy. So are there any other guys who you think are going to be key special teams guys going into this year?
I mean, one of these big wide receivers is going to be that guy, whether it's MVS, EQ. I think whichever receiver is kind of lower on the depth chart is going to be the one that kind of has to do it. Kumaro, I feel like, always is a decent gunner despite not being the biggest or fastest guy out there. I feel like he's just a really smart player, so he knows how to get down the field and beat the press. I think that the guys you mentioned are the key ones, but there's going to be one of these receivers is going to have to be the guy that can go out, be a gunner, go down and make that big. And maybe this is a Chandon Sullivan spot, or Kadar Hallman even. Just one of those guys that's not getting a ton of actual regular snaps on defense, and they get on the field on special teams and they go out and they make a play.
Yeah, I know Josh Jackson did that as well a lot last year. After he got healthy, he embraced special teams, and I give him a lot of credit for that because he had his camp ruined by a foot injury. So seeing guys like that, him and Oren Burks, who are high draft picks, Oren Edmond was a high pick as well, just by a different team, embrace special teams is always encouraging for me to see guys who are willing to put in that work and do those little things. But now as we look toward the coaching staff...
Oh, one quick thing. Josiah DeGuara might be an interesting name to watch on special teams. Danny Vitale played over 50% of special team snaps last year, and I understand they're not a one-to-one replacement, but I have to think that those snaps are probably going to go to him. So if he can show out as kind of an athlete, big guy, and go make some plays there, that's a quick way to move yourself up the depth chart and start getting on the field more often. Special teams gets overlooked a lot, but there's a lot of guys that can make a full career out of, hey, they were making splash plays on special teams, let's put them on the regular part of the field and see what they can do. So I think DeGuara will be a guy to watch this year in that role.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think people have been talking about Matthew Slater being potentially Hall of Famer for his special teams work. But no, I agree with you. And DeGuara got also first-team reps at tight end as well. Of course, Sternberger not practicing, but encouraging for Josiah DeGuara to see the field already on the first day of practice. But looking at the coaching staff, not too much turnover, really only a couple. Obviously, Matt LaFleur, second year's head coach. He's healthy. His Achilles is healed up. That's always promising. I think he's probably done playing a ton of basketball for a while, but he is definitely working with trainers, getting his strength back. He said his calves are not looking great, but he's getting better and better. Other guys, obviously, Nathaniel Hackett, our offensive coordinator, working closely with Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur. Luke Getsy, working closely with them as well. Justin Outen at tight ends coach. Ben Sermons at running backs coach, who I'm nervous about losing in a couple years. I think he's a future offensive coordinator. Adam Stenovich, offensive line coach. Jason Vrabel is the new wide receivers coach. He's taken over for Alvis Whitted, who is now at the University of Wisconsin. at wide receivers coach. Luke Butkus, Kevin Roger, Connor Lewis, and Ruvell Martin are quality controls and assistant to the assistants. Ruvell Martin, of course, the minority fellowship that's been created throughout the NFL. He was the first Packer hire for that. Of course, Ruvell Martin played for the team for a few years, played with Matt LaFleur in college, and having met him before, he's one of the nicest people in football. And it's really cool to see Ruvell Martin back in Green Bay.
Yeah, when I heard that name, and I just remember, I was like, man, that is a big, big human. Because that was the when I would go through the depth chart when I was younger, and especially wide receiver, I was just like, okay, who's tall? And I remembered he was extremely tall and just always taller than everybody else at the position. And I was like, that guy could be good just because he's tall. That's all. That even if he's got nothing else going for him, he can be good because of that. I really like that they are bringing back the offensive, like the majority of the offensive line, the offensive room. Matt LaFleur, hopefully him and Rodgers can really gel this year. Nathaniel Hackett, I'm hoping that he can put some more of his like personal stamps on the offense this year. I don't want to take the ball out of Rodgers' hands because I'm pretty sure that's what everyone is convinced. Hackett and LaFleur want to do is they want to run the ball and just make it to where Rodgers doesn't get to make plays, but I don't think that's what they're trying to do at all. They're just trying to make his life easier. Luke Getsy is a good name to keep around. If Rodgers enjoys working with somebody, it's always good to have that guy in the locker room. You never want to piss off your quarterback, especially when your quarterback is Aaron Rodgers. So the rest of the guys, they're going to gradually build names for themselves as time goes on. I'm interested to see Stenovich this year. The offensive line has spurts where they can look elite, and then they have instances where guys can just get ran over. Like Billy Turner had spurts last year where he was really good, and then he just had other games where he just couldn't stop water if he tried. So that's probably my main guy to watch this year, him and then Jason Vrabel. But
and just one other thing, because I'm on the team website right now and they have the pictures of all the coaches. Adam Stenovich looks like an offensive line coach, but then you have his assistant offensive line coach is Luke Butkus, who looks like a Butkus just with a beard. And if you see that guy walking up on the sidelines, you are terrified.
Dude, he looks like an offensive line guy. Like, that's just – he looks like a trenches guy. Like, it didn't matter if he taught a coach offensive or defensive line. He's just going to be that guy all day long. And I bet he can tell real good stories, though. I bet he's got really good stories about random stuff that has happened to him in his life.
Well, absolutely. So then moving on to the defense, obviously Mike Pettine, back as defensive coordinator. A lot of people wondering if he was going to be kept around. He is. I think a big reason why he was kept around, besides his natural talent as a coach, is the assistants. Because I love the assistant coach group on the defensive side. Obviously, Jerry Montgomery is we talk about rising stars. I think Montgomery on the defensive line is a guy who is going to be in a lot of talks for defensive coordinator spots after the season. Jerry Montgomery's gotten a lot of high praise from guys like Mike Daniels in the past. Kenny Clark has talked a lot about how he's helped him. And I think he's a guy who's going to be a huge name to keep an eye on in the future for coaching ranks. Other guys, Kirk Olivadotti at inside linebacker, Mike Smith at outside linebacker. Mike Smith also best known for his energy on the sidelines in the locker room and for the guy who was reported to be running down the halls yelling for joy when Rashawn Gary was drafted. Ryan Downers is assistant DB coach, other assistants, Butch Berry, Wendell Davis, Christian Parker. But the big one that was brought in was Jerry Gray and the defensive backs. Gray spent the last few years with Minnesota, did a lot of work with Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris, also Xavier Rhodes back when they were in their highest forms. Gray, a veteran guy, a really good coach, and I was shocked that he was available, and the experience and know-how that he brings to this team, working again with Mike Pettine, I think is going to be huge with some of these young corners like Jair Alexander, Kevin King, Chandon Sullivan. Gray is going to be absolutely invaluable as a coach.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see him work with this young corner group and this young defensive back group in general. Like, other than Amos, all of these guys are still on their first contract. It's a really young room, and there's a lot of talent there. Like Josh Jackson had first round talent. He went in the second round, but he was a first round talent with his ball production, length, and size. Jair Alexander has quickly developed into one of the best corners in the NFL. He could stick with everybody. Kevin King, if he could stay healthy, the guy, I'm pretty sure he had, if not number one, he was number two last year in red zone, like rating. like among corners, when he's in the red zone, he just shuts everything down, and it's great to see that. And there was a quote that came out from him yesterday that said, it's okay if people want to say that Jair's number one. He's like, whatever, we're basically the same guy. We're on the field at the same time anyway. The guy I'm interested to watch is Kirk Olivadotti. I think that Kirk, his ability to get the most out of Kirksey, as well as rapidly increase the development of Oren Burks, who through 2 years we haven't really seen a ton. We've only seen him as a special teams contributor. So I'm hoping to see more out of him this year. And if he can bring that out of him, that's a really good developmental thing moving forward. And also, yeah, Jerry Montgomery is going to be a defensive coordinator in the next 3 years. He is able to coach up everybody that he has playing on that defensive line so well, and it doesn't matter what you give him, he's getting good production out of it. Like Dean Lowry got a second contract, and Dean Lowry's motor never shuts off. Kenny Clark just got paid, highest nose tackle in history. I'm interested to see his work with Kingsley Keke, who is a super athletic guy and can probably become a big playmaker for this team. So I like the group that's assembled. I think Mike Pettine, this is his final year, unless he just turns this into like a number one contending unit. I don't think that he's a bad coach. I just think that LaFleur will probably want to bring in his own guy after giving him 2 years there. So, and also Mike Smith's got a really easy job of getting to work with Za'Darius and Preston Smith every day. Like Rashawn Gary, he has to develop him, but getting to work with Z and Preston's probably pretty nice when you come into work on a Monday morning.
Well, I think the three feed off each other, because obviously the energy that Smith brings, and it's well known seeing what he was like when they won the playoff game, when they won the division, like his just manic insanity, almost pro wrestling type energy was visible and pretty voluminous for people to hear and see after that. On special teams, Sean Menenga, Maurice is the coordinator, assistants Maurice Drayden and Raina Stewart. Big year for Menenga. Packers haven't had a good special teams coach ever. We all remember being Ron Zucht and Sean Slocum, and that is the reason why many people drink. Hopefully Menenga can pick that up and become finally a competent coach that this special teams unit has needed for 20 years. But I thought there were promising starts last year. Obviously, Mason Crosby's year was huge. The coverage units were very good last year. I think that's a good view for Menenga. He just needs to get the return games going. But the special teams, if Menenga can be that coach, there's a good core of coaches here in Green Bay.
Yeah, the core that's laid out is really good on all three phases. Like we talked about the offensive assistants, they're good at every level. The defensive assistants I honestly think the defensive assistants are better than the offensive assistants. That's just my personal opinion. The special teams group, Menenga has, like, the pieces are there for him to use. There's athletes all over the place. And if an athlete can't get on the field on offense or defense, he can get them on the field for special teams. Like you said, the coverage units last year were great. I don't know what drills he's using, but their ability to get down the field on kickoff returns and punt returns is just, it's great to see, because other than the occasional broken play, I felt like we're stopping everybody. If they try and return it, you're not getting very far because our coverage guys were always down there. Crosby is a veteran kicker, is great. I want to see his development with J.K. Scott this year, like to develop his consistency and get him to truly start realizing a lot of his potential that he has. And then, like you said, the return game is going to be important. But I think part of that return game is just, like, if Irvin's on the roster, then that's going to help tremendously. But if he's not, you have to get more out of the players that you have. I understand that coaches can only work with what they've got, but they have to, like, just our return game has been anemic for such a long time that I want to see more there. And I think he can do it. He showed us last year that there's flashes. Oh, also, I would request one fake punt this year, just one. I don't think I've ever seen Green Bay do one in my lifetime, and I just want to see one, okay? Like a fake punt pass, or like have two returners go back, like the old Johnny Knox, Devin Hester, like one guy's like looking up like he's got it, but it's actually the guy on the other side of the field, something. Just because no one's going to see that coming out of Green Bay. So That's just my personal like wish for the year.
You don't want to see J.K. Sat sprinting down the field like a deer?
I wouldn't mind, but I would rather see him just in the back, just lobbing it up to somebody. I don't care who, but just something, because that is my favorite play to watch. Is the fake punt is just the best play when it works. And I also had to sit through and watch the unfortunate Green Bay getting scored on by like a Detroit like tight end or whatever it was on a fake field goal. So I just want to see one fake this year. I'm not asking a lot. Like, can we bring Tom Crabtree out of retirement, maybe? Do we got
to
do that?
Well, I was going to say, for that situation, to quote the great announcer Jim Ross, by God, that's Josiah DeGuara's music.
Nice.
And then I guess lastly, well, very quickly, because last year health was so good, strength and conditioning. Chris Gizzy is the coordinator. He switched spots with Mark Lovett. Lovett's now an assistant. Then Thaddeus Jackson and Grant Thorne, the others. And again, when you look at their pictures, they look guys who have lived their lives in the weight room. And this team, with the regimens they brought in with stretching and keeping track of heart monitors and things like that, really jumped into the modern, I don't want to say modern era, but even beyond, with the steps they took last year to keep their guys healthy. And health was so big last year, and I think it's going to happen again this year for them to continue where they left off, especially with all the circumstances, with less camp, less practice, no preseason. These guys' jobs are going to be extremely difficult in the early parts of the year. And so you got to give credit where credit is due to these guys, and I really like what I've seen from Chris Gizzy and from what I've heard from him as the main strength and conditioning coordinator.
A lot of what I'm sure these guys are going to be preaching over the next month is just going to be hamstring exercises, calf exercise, just like soft tissue stuff, because – you know, in the first 3 weeks of the season, everybody's fantasy football roster is going to say question, like going to have a Q hamstring next to it on every single player, because everyone's going to be pulling them. They're not going to be stretching well. But yeah, the health that this team had last year was outstanding. And that's such a big deal when you get down into those December and January games. Like the year Green Bay won the Super Bowl, they had, what was it, 15 players on injured reserve?
It was at least.
It was nuts, and last year they stayed extremely healthy, and this team has good depth at a lot of positions, and that depth, like, it's not, you never want to test it. You never want to be forced to throw in your backup offensive lineman because three guys are hurt, but it's nice to have good ones. But it's when you don't have to do that, you can start your same offensive line group for 100% of the snaps throughout the year. That's a great thing to be able to do, and these guys are responsible for that. I love seeing, like, also, maybe it's just me. Does Grant Thorne have a little bit of a J.J. Watt-looking vibe to him, or is that just me? Am I just seeing that?
No, I agree with you. He's got the hair part like J.J. Watt.
Okay. Anyway, but these guys are the difference between a team that is able to stay healthy all year long and win because of it, and the teams that get bit by the injury bug and then can never recover from it. I've seen Indy get wiped out year after year because they couldn't stay healthy on the offensive line, the defense, just the whole team was getting wiped out. And Green Bay last year, they stayed healthy all year long. They were consistently out there, and it's all because of these guys here. And they get overlooked a lot just because they're not offensive, defensive, special teams coaches, but they matter a ton to this group.
Well, absolutely. And of course, you talked about offensive line injuries. I remember 2 years ago when they started four guards in a center.
That was brutal.
They won.
Yeah, that was brutal, though. You don't want to see that. That's an example of it's nice to have good depth, but you don't want to have to use it.
Hey, Lane Taylor was a solid left tackle.
Yeah, that's what we'll go with. We'll go with that.
Well, with that being said, we'll wrap this one up here on the Packaday Podcast. Again, first day of practice is complete and in the books. Football is on its way back, and everything is looking more and more promising every single day with what we're seeing as far as how testing has gone and how the NFL has, and the players themselves have done a good job of taking care of themselves and keeping each other accountable. Kenny Clark's got his big extension. We talked about the coaches, the special teams. So stay tuned as well. Tomorrow, the team will be taking care of the defensive line. They'll talk a lot more about Kenny Clark and what that contract will mean for the future. But as you start to wrap things up, Gage, where can people find you and what are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at GBridgefordNFL, as always. I'm working on some stuff for the Dynasty Draft Room that we got draft content coming up all the time. I have some Denver Stiffs articles coming out next week, Dynasty Nerds. I think I should have something out at the beginning of next week. And Roto Baller, I'm working on two different pieces for them. That's what I got going on for me right now. Quick shout out to the Seahawks for holding their team extremely accountable. I don't know if anybody saw the news of the guy who tried to sneak a female into the team hotel, and he was promptly cut that day because he was breaking protocol. So, like you said, they're holding people accountable, and that's the definition of holding people accountable. This guy was trying to break onto the roster, and he blew his shot because he made a mistake like that. So that sends a message to everyone in the league. Hey, we're not messing around. We're taking this seriously. There's no everyone going out to the hotel bar or anything like that. We're going to show up. We're going to do our jobs. We're going to go home, and we're going to take it seriously every step of the way. So that's all I got for me today.
Absolutely. And you can find me on Twitter at Mike Wendland. I'm doing a lot more baseball and hockey stuff right now, just keeping track. I'm doing a lot of research to write a book about baseball. But a quick update, kind of similar in your boat. Andy Herman tweeted out a chart from the CDC yesterday, and I know a lot of other contributors joined me in this. If anyone's struggling with anything, anyone wants to talk, my DMs are going to be open always. So if anyone ever wants to talk about anything, just let me know. I know Andy said let him know as well, and other people. So again, find us, let us know, and we're always going to be open to talk. I know this has been a really tough few months for a lot of people with employment things, and no sports definitely hasn't helped, but you're stuck at home, stuff like that. So if anyone ever wants to talk, get a hold of one of us on Twitter. We're always going to be open and willing to talk with you, and whatever we can do to help, we will always be there as well. Also, find us at Packaday Podcast online, wherever you can find podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, all this stuff like that. So for Gage Bridgeford, this is Mike Wendland saying so long for everyone. Stay safe. Always carry the G, look forward to football, and go Pack, go.